Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 6, Episode 6 of MindClickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2025. Today, I'm joined by a true icon of Australian Counter-Strike, Chris Dexter Nong. From the grassroots of the OC scene to some of the biggest international stages with teams like Mouse and Fnatic, Dexter has carved a name as one of the greatest respected IGLs in the game. Known for his composure, clutch ability, and leadership under pressure, he's led teams through some of the most intense LANs in CS history, all while repping the Australian flag. In this episode, we'll unpack his journey to global arenas, explore the unique mindset it takes to lead at the Tier 1 level, and break down the evolution of CS and his performance across the years. Dexter, how are you, brother?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for bringing me aboard.
Legendary. No, I'm excited to do this. I've had quite a few professional Rocket League pros, Apex pros, a few Valorant as well sprinkled in, but I've always sort of been playing CS in the background. I've always been keen to sort of explore and break down the mindset of a CS pro. So I really appreciate taking the time to jump on today.
Sweet. Thank you.
Legendary. Now, run us through the journey. Where did it start back home in OCE, however many years ago? And I guess take us through the journey from OCE into EU and I guess, yeah, the amazing career you've had so far.
Journey probably started in when I was a young boy. Yeah. 1994, bought an object. No, in 2013 is probably when I bought the game, when it was actually not for free. So back then I bought the game and then started playing and all that kind of stuff. I think I had no idea about what esports was at the time or anything like that, but I was going through uni and wanted something to distract me away from all the stupid work that I had to do. I started just playing CS more and more. And from there, got into amateur teams and whatnot. But it wasn't really anything that I've like thought about becoming a pro at. It was just something that I thought was really, really fun. And the learning process was much more interesting than uni at the time. And then at least I was a gym rat back then. And unfortunately, I injured my back during trying to ego lift 150 kilogram squat. And then, I injured my back. And then, I had nothing else to do for 1 month or 2 months in the gym. So I decided just to go hard on gaming a little bit and see what I can do. Kind of grew out into from amateurs to CG main or whatever it's called, and CGI, I think it's whatever back then. And and then from there just kept growing, and it took me probably 5 years of unpaid work to kind of work myself to a position where I could actually be paid, which was shit all. But pretty much got into, I think Winter Fox was the first team I got into, which somehow brought us all the way from Australia to America. And then we decided to play EPL back then. And yeah, that was the first paid team, getting paid $1,200 a month US. And then just survive and party and play games, which was a very unique experience. And then from there, you just kind of keep growing, man. I went back into Australia after that, and just played with Tainted Minds, didn't do too well there, then went to Greyhound, which was my first stepping stone and first time I actually became an IGL. Erkast wanted me to IGL then because I think he kind of raged too much in the game. So the whole team wanted someone that wasn't going to be raging so much. So I kind of stepped into that role, and from there, Greyhound to Renegades to Mouse, Fnatic, FlagFest. So it's been a pretty long journey. So with a lot of details, yeah. It was definitely a surreal experience. I didn't really think about it at the time, but every time these days I reflect on that journey and that time in my life, it's wow, that was crazy. even though I'm a bit older, back then I was like 26 when I moved. It was just crazy. Just Mao's putting me on a business class flight with zero people on board because it was COVID, and just flying me over there. And then, yeah, just everything like to building up and finding a home and working with like the managers to like just make my dream like easy for myself. Yeah, it really helped out. And yeah, every time I kind of look back onto it, it was like one of the hardest times of my life, but also one of the like most gratifying, like satisfying and just great experiences of my like life as well.
Yeah, no, I love that. I often reflect back to, I guess, my initial journey as well when I qualified for my first major in Sweden. And I had the conversation with my parents being like, okay, I've got to leave in like 2 weeks' time. And they were like, are you sure that's not a scam? You sure that's legit? Like, and I guess just that reflection upon, you know, sort of, you know, we deemed like making it, like getting to your first big land. And I think, yeah, it's definitely, once you, I guess, take time to reflect back, there's so many special memories and journeys and I guess life lessons we can take from so many cool opportunities that we get overseas.
Yeah, exactly.
Legendary. Now, how does it work in OCE? I think that's probably one of the biggest questions that I've been having a little bit in terms of CS. So in terms of Rocket League, there's three regionals, and then the top two teams from those three regionals will then go on to play at a major. How does it work in terms of OCE? Is it the same sort of system, or is it a bit of a different system?
Just for the major?
Just for a major or IEMs or anything like that.
Basically, okay, back in the day before 2025, the way it worked was... you would have qualifiers.
Yep.
And then you would just go from open qualifier to closed qualifier to making the event. And it was as simple as that. You could rock up on the day, be the best team on the day, and you'd win.
Right.
Nowadays, then that goes for every single event from IAM to majors.
Okay.
Nowadays, they've changed it so that those teams who maybe have some slight advantage during the day wouldn't be a thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a VRS system, which means like just you get points for how well you do in events / beat what opponents you beat.
Yeah.
And essentially that just means that you have to kind of always be playing throughout the season and
mm-hmm.
be consistently at like a certain level. So if you want to be majors, you have to be at least top four to be invited to the Australia's closed qualification.
Yeah,
things like that. So now it's a lot more like not cutthroat, but it's like more long-term planning that you have to do.
Okay, interesting. Do you think that sort of puts a bit of a spanner in the works for those teams that maybe don't or aren't as consistent in terms of results?
Yeah, it's really tough. Like even for me, like if since I got benched, I would like instantly back in the day, someone would pick me up, we would get paid as much as possible, and then we'd instantly try and make the major and probably make the major. But now these days, you have to make a much more of a long-term investment into the team. And yeah, I guess a lot of orgs are a bit more wary of that, especially in Australia where everyone's tired. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Do you think that, I guess, is going to play a bit of an impact, I guess, in the longevity of OCCS? I guess when you have a team like FlyQuest, who's I guess pretty dominant, you know, pretty much of an outlier, what does that look like for the rest of the teams in that regard, do you think?
I think in terms of making majors, the rest of the teams can still be able to get into the position to beat them.
Right.
I think a lot of the teams I'm watching right now, they're constantly being able to put up the decent results to be invited to the closed qualifier part of the major.
Yeah.
I guess you can call it. And from there, they have to just work their asses off in a billion different ways and to beat FlyQuest, essentially. And that's just the goal of everyone in Australia right now.
Yeah.
They're going to have that opportunity. It's just how well they use the opportunity.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that's pretty much similar in Rocket League. Like, there's usually one dominating team, but then it's about, I guess, you know, on game, on the day, how does that team sort of stack up against it? And can you cause a bit of an upset? Can you kind of get across the line and try and, you know, quali?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, love that. Awesome. Now, I guess sort of reflecting back, I guess from an individualized perspective, I think one of the biggest things I love talking with previous pros about is, or current pros, is I guess the mindset, you know, going into a big event. What does that look like for you, I guess, from a mental perspective, even from a physical perspective?
I think from going into a game, you mean like on stage or just like a standard game, like online game?
I guess let's start with like a standard online game, like say it was a quali, for example, an online quali.
Yeah. I think these days through experience, I guess you could say without sounding like too much like a dickhead. Through my experience, I've kind of like, it's all been negated, that level of thought. I think I've been able to just live so many situations, so many positives and negatives, that nerves don't actually really get to me. Mm. At least when I'm versing my opponent. And I think with online games back in the day, it felt like everything was like always on me, at least to kind of perform. Mm. Even from the amateur level to the higher levels. But then I don't know if anything exactly clicked, but I think with CS and I guess you can call it sports or athletes or whatever, yep, you have to kind of develop some sort of ego at some point. And it's all about keeping it in check. But I think around 2018, I developed an ego in a sense that I was able to know that, like, going into every situation that I was the most confident in.
Yep.
And with a game like CS, it's all about confidence and not hesitating with how you make your decisions and making sure that you're like a little bit faster, 0.1 second faster. And I think when I hit that point, I was able to kind of just coast into every game without having to overthink anything. I would just make sure that my life as a whole was at its best, as you could say, with like,
yep,
health and family and everything like that. And I think I'm a bit different to a lot of other players because I know other players would do completely different things.
Yeah.
But I would use that positive energy from my life to kind of have a good impact in the game, go into the game without being like so life or death. Like, as silly as it sounds, I was always the one saying like, yeah, it's just a game. Like, it's a computer game. There's a trillion things going wrong in the world, and you're here playing a video game or playing sports or whatever, and you're doing it for money, if anything. And of course, winning will be great, and is always great. But to relieve that pressure from my head, I was just like, I'm just here to play the game. And it felt a lot more natural once I got into that mentality.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think that's really special. I definitely resonate that with that, especially with a couple of my previous players who were primarily just playing Rocket League. And Rocket League was, I guess, the base foundation of the day. So, for example, scrims went bad. Their whole day was bad. So I think it's pretty important to differentiate between, I guess, playing and, I guess, everything outside of the PC, right? And I guess not being able to, like, just let something super specific and minute in the grand scheme of things have a complete negative impact on, you know, the rest of your 16 hours of the day, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Love that. Legendary. Do you think that, I guess, that confidence you developed over time to be able to, I guess, have, I guess, that own self-efficacy towards your own decisions helped translate into your IGL skills, whereby in those high-pressure moments, in those high-pressure situations, you can make, I guess, what you think is the right call?
Yeah, most of the time you have to kind of translate that info across. With IGLing in CS, a lot of it relies on your teammates and everything like that as well.
Right.
But because there might be days where not all five players are operating at the at least 80% level, I like to call, in terms of communication, then you have to always be the one that's like trusting in your call.
Yeah.
and to kind of translate that confidence over towards your teammates through your energy, through your levels. And yeah, that's a thing I learned with at least my sports psychologist when I worked with Mouse.
Love that.
To kind of be able to, I guess, give impact to my voice and my energy levels and my decision-making, even if it's the completely worst decision in the world.
Yeah.
To give that confidence to my teammates.
Yeah, love that. Truly spoken like a real good leader. Love that, mate. Awesome. I guess from a perspective of sort of feeds in quite nicely, team environment, and I guess developing what we like to call, I guess, team, a positive team culture. All of my previous teams, my sole goal has to been, I guess, to establish a team environment, team culture that's facilitated around, I guess, in OCE, we love to say like playing with the boys and just having a good time, right? I guess for you, how important is having that team and culture where everyone has that buy-in towards the same shared common goal?
I think at least in Australia, it's a lot more important than it was in Europe. Okay. In a weird way.
Yeah.
Australia, like whole culture, at least the teams I've been have been in, like the best teams I've been in Australia have always had like an amazing team culture with like, yeah, things don't matter after the game, like we're boys and let's try and improve and whatever.
Yeah.
So once that happens, then usually most of the time, at least the teams I've been in, like we've had good results because of it.
Mm.
And usually you would be able to talk and be able to practice and everything in a good way. However, I do think things have changed significantly.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it is so important for a team to be able to operate that way.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think that, I guess reflecting on some of my previous teams, like we always go, you know, whether it be into a championship Sunday, into a grand final, with a level of, I guess, collective expectations. And I think expectations and managing expectations is something that a lot of players sometimes get stuck up on, whereby, say, for example, you are the better team. Some players go into the, I guess, into the game thinking, you know, we deserve this win because we're better. I think how important do you think is managing expectations, I guess, to not really get it too ahead of yourself?
I think it's so important because yeah, many times I've versed like teams that are kind of, I guess, lower ranked, and you verse them in practice or you verse them in like many situations and it's like, yeah, you've destroyed them. But for some reason in these officials that you're just going to start losing. And as soon as you don't manage that level of like expectation and how you feel, the stress builds up like tenfold.
Yeah.
And I've been in the situation before on both ends where, you are the underdog and then, the team that's played in Europe or played in, whatever being paid $300,000 US, per person a year.
Mental.
Like you beat them. It's because their expectations are like, I guess, so high that once anything goes wrong, the level just drops off fast and people don't know how to handle it. And usually when they try to handle it, they're actually, I guess, handling it in a way where they're portraying that negative energy into their teammates. And once that happens, it's like a whole snowball effect where everyone just collapses essentially.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely been situations where I can definitely sort of relate to that. And I think it's important, I guess, when we talk about, I guess, communication and within the team, I guess, how we administer feedback. I think it's really interesting because within esports, you know, within teams as well, specifically, individualization is such a, I guess, special thing whereby someone might like to be really roused up and, you know, you're the best. Someone might like something a bit of a different approach towards how they hype them up or, I guess, how they deliver feedback in terms of, you know, you did this wrong, that was wrong. Or, you know, some people might like that direct feedback, whereas others might like a little bit more of a softer approach. I guess within CS, what does that feedback delivery system look like? Is it really just cutthroat? Is it, you know, how do you find your way through that?
I think it's a cultural thing, definitely. That's one thing I kind of looked on and learned. Because, like, I'm no like, I'm no superstar in terms of that as well, because I think, and a lot of people would also say the things like, I probably, like, if I could say, fucked up things in terms of the way, yeah, I probably fucked up things in terms of the way I spoke to people as well, but I definitely try to always learn from it, is, I guess, the difference. Going from, I guess, my top teams, like, when I was first in Greyhound, the way we spoke to each other was a little bit way more boys will be boys, and let's just joke around and, like, there's no issues kind of thing. But then as soon as I got to MALS, where I'm playing with at least two or three Eastern European people, the culture, like, changes significantly, where I'm playing with three Eastern European people and two Western European people, and then, like, their way of, like, wanting to, like, get down to the point is so different. And I had to kind of learn both skills, and mainly in MALS at the time, like the first iteration of MALS, I had to learn how to just give it as cutthroat as possible, because that's what everyone wanted, apparently. So I would try to give it as cutthroat as possible, even after I just came from a Western dominated team in Australia, where everything was like, boys are boys, it's chill, or whatever. But it was, like, complete opposite when I first joined, and we played our couple of practices and something would go wrong. And then someone would message me in Steam chat. I was like, why are you not raging at this person for this? And I was like, what? I have to rage at someone or something? So that kind of, like, blew me away. But then as soon as, like, I was like, okay, I'll do this and I'll learn from this. And I worked with my sports psychologist to kind of do it in the best way possible at the time. I had a great success with it, and it worked well for a lot of games and years, I guess, coming into the future. Then cut back to me coming back to Australia. It's like, again, there's still boys through boys theory. And when I'm the one being in the leadership position with this whole new theory of how to give criticism or be direct to the point, it doesn't work in the team. Hence why I'm here with no job, but, you know, you know, like, that's like, these small differences can impact a lot of people in a way. And if I was Captain Hindsight, like, I would definitely change how I definitely communicated to my teammates in different scenarios, and would be way more considerate of that. But that comes with someone that, like me, who's just been in so many scenarios. And even though I've been in a lot of these scenarios, everything is always different. And I have to kind of learn from my own mistakes in the leadership position as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. I definitely resonate with that as being a coach. Like, there's been so many individuals over the years that I've had, I guess, individual encounters with, whereby they sort of take feedback on board in different ways, and it's hard to sort of micromanage. And I think learning from mistakes, whilst it's tricky, it's like one of those pivotal things you have to, I guess, gradually learn to do. And sometimes it goes really well. Sometimes it's like you really just messed up really badly, and it's like, that's the reality. That's something we have to accept. And I guess, what does it look like, you know, going forward, and trying to sort of work around that. So, yeah, I think it's pretty tricky, but I think it's one of those things that just sort of comes with experience, as you said.
Yep,
for sure. When you, I guess, first jumped up on MALS, I guess, sort of backtracking a little bit, do you think that you had room to, I guess, be yourself in terms of showing your own flair and, I guess, your own, I guess, OC backstory in terms of the skills you developed here? Or was it primarily just transitioning into the way MALS plays, and that's the sort of the way they want to do it?
I think when I changed into MALS, like, it wasn't applying my flair as a leader, but applying my flair as a player more so, and how I played the game. I definitely was able to successfully do that, hence why we won a couple of online tournaments at the very start of the year. But then when you go into a team in a, like, in Europe, where you kind of are the leader, there was just so much more that I had no idea of how to operate and how to make things more efficient for my team, more to speak, how to time things, everything. And even though it felt like I was changing the way I was calling, there was actually a very sensible reason for that, because the whole industry and whole way things worked around in-game leading was completely different over there. And right. I had to catch up as fast as I could. Luckily, I'm a good learner, so I was able to do it in a couple months and, yeah, transition us into like a top five team in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great, but it took a lot of work, a lot of self-reflection, a lot of reading books, a lot of making sure, like, yeah, I was operating at a much higher level than everyone else. And yeah, I'm glad I was able to kind of tiptoe my way into that.
Yeah, no, props to you, brother. I don't think it's hard to do that, and it's hard for a lot of people to try and, I guess, make that change and micromanage that for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I think people get shell-shocked a lot of the time when they change teams and everything like that. So once they step into that, they have to kind of be open to that self-reflection a lot more. And yeah, if they don't do that, then their whole world is going to crumble around them. And yeah, it almost happened to me. But yeah, if you don't, then yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Going into your first, I guess, big LAN with Mouse, was there a lot of internalized pressure in knowing that, hey, you know, now we've got a pretty big org backing, everything's pretty serious now, like, we've got to perform? Was there a bit of, like, I guess, yeah, build up internalized pressure that sort of started to develop?
Yeah, it was a lot of different pressures, I guess, because we went into IAM Cologne,
yeah,
which was like during COVID, where everything was just real weird, real, real weird. Mm. But we were a top four team at the time, and we went into COVID and into Cologne, sorry, and we kind of failed. But we just didn't know, like, what systems failed exactly.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely didn't have, like, too much pressure, in my opinion. But I think going into the first during COVID LAN, where everything was different, we just didn't really know how to operate at the time because, yeah, this was real different for everyone.
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting. I think reflecting back post-COVID was definitely the first time I attended Sweden Major, and that was a bit of a crazy time, sort of micro-navigating everything, all the rules and stuff. So, yeah, I could imagine in your footsteps what that was like as well.
Yeah, it's really, really different.
For sure. I guess going into your first successful LAN, and I guess the development towards that, what was that like for yourself from a mental perspective in terms of, all right, now we're doing pretty well now, let's try and micromanage expectations and pressure, and I guess, you know, how did you do that?
I think for myself at least, I try not to, like, give a fuck so much. as you could say, I think the first really successful LAN, I guess, would be, like, 2022 Cologne, where we make playoffs,
yep,
from, like, underdog position. We were having, like, a terrible year at that point in 2022. But I think at that point, when things have not been working out for so long,
yeah,
and your expectations actually drop, and, like, you don't have any expectations, you go into each game with such a higher level of CS,
yeah,
and in anything you do as well. So I think it was, like, at that moment when things had kind of clicked, like, it made sense for me, where this pressure that I'm making up around my head, around performing, around being the best, around being the best team and leader,
yeah,
it's not even a real thing. You don't take that into the game. Like, I'm the person in the most impactful position in regards to my influence on the team.
Yeah.
If I'm taking all these other, like, storm clouds with me, I'm going to be in a position where I'm probably going to fuck up the whole game and the team. So once I had lucky run where I was able to make a good playoff or a good impression for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It just clicked in my head. I was like, okay, this is like this is this moment and the past moments where I've had success, it's because like my brain has been different and things haven't mattered so much. And I need to just try and apply this to every game from now on as best as I can. And yeah, once that clicked, it just made my life a lot easier in terms of pressure and all that.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think it's, yeah, I think a lot of pro players listening, I think, could definitely take something away from that. And I think being able to sort of understand the micro balances of expectations and pressure is something that gets to a lot of players, right? So I think it's important to have different approaches and I guess find an individualized approach that works for you that you can really take on board and I guess back yourself in on for sure.
Yep.
Now, as you were sort of saying that, I was sort of just thinking in terms of tilt. Now, tilt's a big one. And I guess getting tilted is common across so many games, right? I guess as an IGL, when one of your, I guess, other players gets tilted, what is that experience like, or how do you manage that experience? Is it on you primarily? Is it on coach? You know, what does that, I guess, sort of break down into?
I guess reflecting on my like FlyQuest experience, a lot of the time,
yeah,
it felt like it was on me to kind of deal with it.
Mm.
And in my opinion, it should never really be on me.
Mm-hmm.
But naturally, when I'm the most experienced and I just want things to kind of move along, I would try to deal with it. But I don't think I was, in my sense, qualified enough to do that. Or I didn't have enough experience to do that and probably made things worse than it could have been, because I'm also seeing it from a point of view of a IGL where I want things to move forward, but I'm not going to be that person that's going to be also considerate or whatever to people's feelings, because
yeah,
it takes time to be that person. At the same time, you have to kind of be on their level and be patient and everything like that, and talk in the right way. So when dealing with tilt, it could be 50-50 in terms of how I kind of dealt with my teammates on that, I would say. So I'm not perfect by any means, but I try to always kind of reflect on it at the same time. But in my teams, such as like Mouse and Fnatic,
yeah,
totally different aspect as well, because we had sports psychologists working with us a lot of the time, and their teachings and their like philosophies would be taught to everyone,
mm-hmm.
but they would also be taught to our coach, who enacted a lot of these things. Who,
nice.
Who, like his name is Cyclone from Mouse right now. He at first when he came in, he was very, I guess you could say, amateurish with how he did things still.
Mm-hmm.
He was still a great coach, but there's a lot to learn. But then within a few months' time, he worked his ass off in terms of reading books, in terms of working with a psychologist to be that leadership person. And the way he was able to speak and talk to his teammates on their level and just be able to like reflect and see things from their point of view was amazing. And yeah, it's, he helped me a bunch as well with the team in terms of like dealing with these things and making sure that I knew what mattered and what didn't, and more often than not, pointed me towards it, the idea that like, yeah, this didn't matter, or this mistake didn't matter, you shouldn't be tilted, or, and then also the same concept to my teammates, and it always like resulted in a better environment in the team. So that's probably like the main way I kind of dealt with tilt in my experience. But when I applied it to myself, I never really tilted at myself. In terms of like, yeah, just getting frustrated with everything, because I feel like if I was that person that got frustrated at myself with my calling, with my playing, with whatever, then it's like a billion times worse than
big snowball
than anything in the world. So yeah, I try to like definitely have that chill mentality with how I approach things, and yeah, glad it worked out.
Yeah, no, love that. I appreciate the insights, brother. I think it's important, yeah, to also, I guess, highlight the importance of having external allied health professionals working within teams, like a sports psych, to sort of provide a bit of a different outlet. As you well know, you know, here within OCE, it's not too common in comparative to NA or EU or even MENA, SAM now, have external sports sites working with teams to provide support for game day, to sort of help manage tilt, pressure, expectations, develop confidence. And I think it's definitely a big tool.
Yeah, people in Australia, because they don't use this, as you said, allied health professionals and whatnot, jumping in and back from Australia, the difference in the ability of teammates and to talk to each other is so huge. And I like to often apply this to even just the Australian men in general. A lot of the time people would just joke about things and rag on each other or whatever in a joking way. It applies to like esports teams and sports teams as well. No one really knows how to convey their feelings, and I would say one in five, at least in my experience, 1 in 5 people would actually know how to kind of like say, hey, Dexter, or hey, you, I didn't really like how this was done or this was done and how things were spoke to me or whatever. And that's so rare, because a lot of the time, at least in Australian teams, the communication was dealt with in a backhanded way, in behind people's backs, and it is such a negative way to kind of go about things. And that's why it's like so important to have these people that just like facilitate these conversations, to be able to open up to each other, be able to remove any tension just instantly. And that's how like you get the best of the best.
Yeah, no, I love that. I absolutely, you know, that ticks all the boxes in terms of the stuff I've developed and put towards teams. And I remember reflecting back to a major in LA, and we previously beat Fury in Sweden. So we went into it with this expectation, like, oh, we've done it before, let's just do it again, right? And we got our hands sort of put to us, and it wasn't too great. And I remember the commentators saying that one of the players looked like the Grim Reaper just on cams, how he was like death staring into the camera. And there was this bit of negative energy within the team, and I sort of brought them back, and we went to the back to the sort of practice room, and I closed the door, and I remember just saying, righto, boys, I don't know what's going on, but I want everyone to sort of just share how they're feeling, and we're not going to leave this room until it's solved. And like, how can we talk about this, boys? And we sort of came to a really nice resolution eventually, like after 10, 15 minutes, and we're in the lowers, and we had to play Fury again, and then we went out and swept Fury. So I think having the importance of, I guess, yeah, having active communication, and it's hard. And I really resonate with what you said about like Australian men, like having those hard conversations. It's not something like we always do, right? But I think being able to do that and create those, you know, underlying bonds, I think definitely has a big impact.
Yeah, it's probably easier to talk to people that are like strangers compared to talking to your best mates or your teammates or whatever. Because you've been around them for so long, like there's a stigma that everyone, or you already know each other so well or whatever, but in reality, you don't really know each other at all.
Yeah.
And your mates in the face of everything like that. But in reality, like in the professional world, in esports or whatever, you weren't really doing anything that would actually be considered a friend. Actively not talking in the positive light behind your teammate or whatever, because you just don't know how to like talk directly to them.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's just how it usually goes.
Yeah, for sure. I hope that, you know, I'm actively trying to push, I guess, OC in terms of how we look at things from a performance and a sports like perspective. So, you know, hopefully within the next 5 to 10 years, it, you know, actively comes a little bit more, I guess, developed in how we handle ourselves and, I guess, push the professionalism as a region towards, you know, competing.
Yeah, that'll be great.
For sure. Legendary. Now, one thing that I was curious about is in Rocket League, we have timeouts. From my understanding, that doesn't really, it sort of exists. You get like 4 per map in CS, or is it 2 per map?
CS2 right now, it's 3 okay. per map.
Okay. And I guess break down a timeout for us. What does that sort of look like? In Rocket League, we only get like 1 minute, and that's pretty bang. There you go. In CS, what does that look like? What sort of gets discussed in a timeout?
In CS, you get 30 seconds.
Even, yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, so you get 30 seconds, and you kind of have to kind of just understand what's going on and be on the same page. There's timeouts that you can use to kind of relieve pressure. That's been used a lot where you don't even have to say anything. You just, things happen, and then it's like, okay, let's just take a timeout and a breather. And then you go into the next game doing whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But most times timeouts are used in a sense that coach will speak, or a player with a certain idea will speak, or even an IGL mm-hmm. would speak. And there will be a topic just based on what can we do as a team to really enhance our performance and things like that. And we usually come to a conclusion, a plan, and yeah, that's just how you go about it. And just trying to reset mentally reset, so you can just, yeah, smash out the rest of the game, because 30 seconds is not enough time to make a plan for the rest of the game, but 30 seconds is definitely enough to conclude on like how you want to present yourself as a team. So that's how it usually goes.
Yeah, no, interesting. Love that. What is it, I guess, in comparison, what's it like between games then? Is it a bit of a longer break? Because in between Rocket League, we have like, I think, like a minute or not even in between games. But in CS, obviously, there's a bit of a longer break. Is that more about, especially if you lost the game, is that more about, righto, getting back on the same page to then, you know, if it's a best of 3, for example, having to win the next 2, you know, trying to come sort of back against the wall sort of mindset and sort of reset completely?
Yeah, with CS, you have 15 minutes between maps. Okay. So then if you're in the losing position, you kind of, at least with Mals, which did it the best in my opinion, yeah. The 15 minutes, if you lose, then we speak about like what went wrong. Everyone gets a turn of like speaking about like their issues or whatever.
Nice.
And then we kind of go into the next game with that in mind of like, okay, maybe the AWPer didn't have a great game, or I'll need to encourage him more, or just like many, many, many different things that could go on.
Yep.
And yeah, we would kind of conclude on those thoughts. How do we better perform as a team and all that? And then go into the game with just like a better mentality, because everything is already cleared. It's like almost like a speed run of a session with a sports psychologist. But we do this as a unit of 6 or 7. If we win, again, Mals are the best, we would often reflect on what made us win. Mm-hmm. And if there was anything that kind of went wrong. And once we done that, then we'll probably like just be in a much better position with like calming ourselves down, not creating like an ego, and making sure that we understand like, yeah, these are the tools we used and ideas we had that led us to this win. Let's just continue and let's keep up this good energy. Don't suddenly, for example, don't suddenly be down really fast if you lose one round and change the mentality. You're winning because you're happy and you're moving things along.
Yeah.
But as soon as you lose, obviously your cortisol levels are gonna like rise and everything like that. So
yeah.
But you need to be able to still maintain that even fake positivity for the rest of the guys to be able to just make their comeback, because it just takes a little switch to kind of make you a better or a worse team.
Yeah, love that. Try and reignite the fire and, yeah, sort of get it going again.
Yep.
Beautiful. What does... Now, I think this was a fan question that sort of came in. Shout out to that person who sat in. I guess, what does the morning of game day look like for you? Like, what are the non-negotiables? Is it getting into the gym, having a bit of a session to sort of release the stress, if there is any stress built up? Is it sort of doing a bit of visualization, sort of kicking back for 10, 15 minutes and sort of going over stuff in your head? What does that sort of look like for you, day of game?
I think for me, it usually depends on when the game is. So sometimes you have to play at 9:30 or 10:30, which means you're up by at least 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I have more time, then it'll change. But let's say, for example, I have an early game.
Yep.
Early game, my non-negotiables are, definitely be able to, as dumb as it sounds, make sure I have a shower, wake up, breakfast, go for a 30-minute walk outside to wake up.
Yep.
To kind of reduce any like stress throughout the day and make sure I have a number two. And then, just go into the game as prepared as possible. If I have an early game, I'm usually prepared before the day.
Mm-hmm.
So the night before, I would definitely do any in-game stuff.
Yep.
Already prepared, so that I can make sure that I can fall asleep and just be like, okay, wake up, nothing else to do, go into the game. Play some DM and then go from there. If it was like later in the day, I would make sure that like the night before I would have a lot more rest,
mm-hmm.
More me time. That involves going to the gym and all that kind of stuff.
Nice.
And I would just repeat what I do for the day coming and then just, go for a walk, still eat, still do all that stuff and go from there. When it came to in-game stuff all the time, I would always like visualize.
Nice.
For myself, meaning once I had a few minutes to go around in the map by myself, I would just go around. I wouldn't even deathmatch, but I would just pretend like how I would play, basically.
Yep.
Not like anything in depth, but just be in the moment and see myself doing this a little bit more, see myself clearing this angle and whatever. Sometimes I was inconsistent with that, but when I was consistent, I felt like I was in much better shape, personally.
I love that. And I'm glad to sort of hear that some of those things definitely stood out to you, like going to gym, sort of having that routine and doing visualization. I've chatted with a lot of players previously, and a lot of people are sometimes ambivalent about those sort of external principles in terms of having the same age-old mindset. And we talk about a lot on the show of, I've gotten to the top by doing what I always do, so why would I do anything different? And I think it's about changing the mindset to sort of understand that those few extra percents in terms of, the 1-2% can definitely make a difference.
Yeah, I've definitely had a lot of those conversations with a lot of players where they've been like, I've stayed up to 4 a.m. before a match a lot of the times and won. But things change with a lot of like esports especially. So you need to kind of utilize whatever you can to get a little bit better and relieve that pressure. But at the same time, I know players that aren't used to doing that and know that they have to kind of do these extra 5% or 2% things.
Yeah.
But that adds a lot of pressure towards them actually, to do these things, and then they create a like bubble where they need to like do all these things to perform. But in reality, like, you just do them to make you feel good and make sure you grow as a person as well, and don't like stress about it as much. And I guess with an experience of a lot of people in this industry, like, people don't really know how to balance things in the right way, because like teams I've been in the past have been like, all right, you need to have salads for lunch. You need to lose weight or whatever. But
yeah,
the best teams at the time, like, I remember walking down after Na'Vi won a major or something like that. I called them in the hallway and then I asked them, well, I see them having McDonald's,
yeah,
right? Not after they won the whole comp, but after they just won a couple games, and I see them having McDonald's, and I asked them, oh yeah, what do you normally eat? Where's your salad? And I was like, we just always have McDonald's. We never have any like salads or anything like that. And though from a performance management point of view, that person's probably seeing it as like, oh my god, this person's going to be unhealthy as fuck, and it's going to deteriorate the way they play. But at the same time, they're happy as fuck, and going into a game happy is, especially in CS, is a big factor.
I love that. I think that's such an important contrast to make, because I think often we have that expectation that, you know, to perform at the best, you have to be doing the best things. But in reality, it's about managing happiness with performance. And I think that's a crucial metric. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's why I would always, even though I'm going to the gym, I'm going to the gym because it made me happy.
Yeah.
I'm reading a book because it makes me happy.
Love.
I'm going for a walk because it makes me happy. And that's how it applies. And a lot of the esports players, they probably don't know all these outside things that could make you happy. So once they actually try it and it makes them happy, then it's like, okay, let's utilize that and keep going. But not to be forced into that is different. So yeah, it's important.
No, 100%. Love that. Now, you mentioned visualization earlier. One thing that I used to previously do with a player who had never been to a LAN before was taking through like vivid visualizations to mimic a crowd and mimic a stage environment, like listening to audio of crowds, listening, like having lights on to sort of get, I guess, stage presence. What was it like for you for the first time playing on stage and, I guess, looking at a giant crowd, dealing with the noise, dealing with the lights, dealing with the heat of being on crowd, being on stage?
I think the biggest crowd I've played on this was like IM Cologne, which was, I think, 18 to 20,000 people. I think for me, it never felt like I was pressured to perform as best as I can or anything like that. I actually just went into the game in a better feeling because it wasn't like the crowd is there to judge me in my eyes. It was the crowd was there to give energy in the room, and I felt most of the time I was just going to be able to suck the energy out of the air, you know, and like utilize it. And yeah, it happened, like a lot of crazy plays and a lot of best moments in my career have been because of like a crowd. So I actually perform better with the crowd, and I have less pressure because of a crowd, because I'm going to be doing things that are like showcasing my talent in front of them. And it makes me, again, like what we said, like it makes me happy to kind of be in that position. So I'm utilizing that energy.
I love that. I think that's like one of the perfect mindsets to have, is to sort of encapsulate the energy a crowd brings, right? Same thing that I sort of had at my first Worlds with some of the Renegades boys, just sort of walking out in Dallas, and we're playing against NRG. I think the crowd was like 98% against NRG, for NRG, and like there was like 1% for us. But still, just encapsulating the crowd and just getting into it, like enjoying it, I think is an important moment, because in reality, you know, you can't control that crowd. What you can control is within your little box, and it's within your domain. So I think it's about, yeah, trying to differentiate what you can control versus what you can't control.
Yeah, one of the best things that someone said to me, it was Kerrigan who said to me, once you step onto that stage, don't imagine yourself in front of everyone in a way that it's like negative and you have to perform. But literally just take 5 minutes and turn off your monitor or whatever, or don't even look at your monitor, and then just look at the crowd. Just like have some gratitude for like the position you're in right now, and enjoy that moment, because it's not going to happen all the time. No, like we're going to lose and all that. So once you're on stage, like enjoy that moment, because for further games in the future, you're going to utilize that energy for yourself. So yeah, I often would, yeah, just take that time and just sink myself into the chair, you know, and just be like, this is what life is all about, and enjoy that.
Yeah, I love that. Sort of being existent in the moment and really just taking it in, because, you know, the last thing you want to do is take it for granted, right? Because you never know, you know, I never know when the next time my next, I guess, stage appearance or LAN will be. So it's important to take into consideration those moments and really make them special.
Yeah, exactly.
Love that. Awesome. Now, I think we'll go into let me just double check to see if there's anything else that I wanted to cover. But I think that was probably the main things that I was really curious about. What is, I guess, one thing that stands out, what does practice look like for you? Is it like regimented in terms of, all right, 3 hours here, 4 hours there? Is it only scrims? Is it practicing against other teams? Is it, I guess, individual strats, nades, that sort of stuff that you go over? A bit of combination of everything?
Yeah, pretty much every team does the same thing, but sorry, someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm 99% sure everyone does the same thing where yeah. It's just everyone does at least 2 hours of theory.
Okay.
Plays, have a small break. There's three scrims, an hour break, two or three scrims, 30 minutes talk, and then repeat for the rest of your life.
Damn, that's heavy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure every team does that and make sure everything's like really regimented. Everyone has the calendar. Everyone understands what's going on, what day it is, what things to focus on. And yeah.
Interesting. How important is it counter-strutting against an upcoming team? In Rocket League, it's not something we do too often. We rather focus on playing the game the way we want to play it and make the other team play how we want to play. But obviously in CS it's a bit different, right? Because different teams execute different ways. They hold sites differently. So how important is, I guess, looking into a team? And I guess it's probably, is it a tricky balance to not go too deep into it?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult thing because in my experience of it, everyone will fall into the trap of counter-stratting too hard, especially in Australian teams where they think that they know like everything that's going on, but in reality, that team has actually counter-stratted some other team where, or whatever you've watched has counter-stratted another team, so they're playing to a different way, so like a stack-on thing, and then like they're not playing their own game.
Yeah.
So these days with CS, a lot of players would, I mean, a lot of teams would really be focused on playing their own game.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, a lot of IGLs would counter-strat just for their sake, for things that they can look onto. For me, I would often counter-strat in the way that I can see one pattern or one little thing that is the most common, and then utilize that.
Yeah. Okay.
So most of the time, 90% of the time, it's just playing our own game, and yeah, that's the best way to achieve it.
Love it. Yeah. Interesting. I think a lot of people listening can take that because I think a lot of conversations I've had is a lot of fixation about what other teams are doing, and then all of a sudden, I've spent like 10% on actually myself and what I want to do. Right. So. I think, understanding what you want to do and how you want to play is important for sure.
Yep.
Legendary. Now we'll go into some sort of rapid fire questions here that I've got, which I think could be pretty cool before we sort of have our, I guess, final takeaways and I guess a bit of an insight towards the end of the episode. Favorite map, what do you got?
Favorite map. Back in the day, it had to be Kaish.
Okay. They're bringing that back, are they? Aren't they? I think I saw.
There's a new one coming out, but it's not official yet. It's just there, but it'll be great to play. It's an amazing map.
Love that. Favorite knife.
Forest DD Pat gut knife.
Why that?
Because it's the ugliest knife you can get and the rarest.
W, love that. Any crazy airport experiences that you've had, like delays?
Probably the worst thing I've done was pretty much not airport experience, but travel day experience was just forgetting that I had a flight.
Oh, no way, brother.
It was like shooting the last one, and I don't know. I just read all the dates wrong in my head and I felt so confident because I've done this a million times.
Yeah.
And then for this millionth and one time I read it and had the dates backwards. I mean, like the time zones and everything different in my head. And I was like, I get home and then there's like, I get a text. There's 2 hours until your flight. And I'm like, what? And because I thought it was tomorrow. And then it was like, oh shit, I just fucked up and I had to pay like $5,000 of my own money to.
Oh, no way.
To kind of get myself to Europe ASAP.
Shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
So that was probably the worst thing I've ever done in my life.
Got to double check the schedules. You prefer playing CT or T?
CT because less pressure on me to perform.
Nice. Love that. CS2 or CSGO? Or 1.6?
CSGO, definitely.
Okay. Why CSGO?
I say this to everyone when everyone asks me this, but both games are great, but the feeling and feeling in like being one with the game is way more, you can feel it a lot more in CSGO basically. And it's all due to how the servers and pick rate and all that stuff works. And in CS2, you just feels disjointed. You don't feel the satisfaction of your one taps as much and things like that.
Okay.
And it just is real different. It's hugely different compared to CSGO. And the reason I started playing was because I just wanted to make this stupid highlight of a deagle or do a sick AWP thing or rifle thing, but it just doesn't translate well to CS2, and that's why a lot of people don't love the game as much, because it's just, yeah, it's missing.
Mm, interesting. Okay, cool. Are you a surfer or not a surfer?
Real life or?
On CS, in-game.
Okay, I'm a terrible in-game surfer and real life surfer. So, yeah, I think I like to do it for fun, but I'm pretty bad at it.
Okay, cool. Most underrated utility in the game?
Most underrated utility in the game? Nade.
Okay.
HE nade and nade timing. Yeah.
Awesome. And favorite non-CS game to wind down with or to sort of chill out on?
Right now it would be Mechabellum.
Mechabellum, what's
that? It's like I forgot what the hell it's called. But it's like there's games where you just kind of place your chess units and then they just fight it out.
Oh,
and it's just
yep,
like,
yep. Like auto
Auto-battler. Auto-battler. That's what it's called. And it's just like a huge battle. One around mechs, and it's just so, it requires intelligence and also it's just stupid fun, and yeah, that's why I love it.
Okay.
Very rewarding.
Okay. I used to play a lot of auto chess back in the day, so I might have to check that out.
Yeah. It's an amazing game. You'll love it.
Cool. Awesome. If you didn't go down the route of being a CS pro, what do you think you would have ended up doing?
I think I would have worked in the travel industry because I have a commerce and tourism management double degree. So I would have done something like that. And then if it didn't work out well for me or like I didn't love it as much, then yeah, I probably would have transitioned into like being a chef or something like that. Because I love anything related to food, cool. As in making food. So yeah.
Love that. Favorite cuisine then?
Favorite cuisine. Oh, that's a tough one. Real tough. But I guess, I think right now my day-to-day favorite cuisine would be Mediterranean food.
Mm-hmm.
Anything with garlic, lemon, and herbs mixed together, thrown in, just something simple like that is great now, especially for your health. But yeah, anything else, sushi, Chinese, Vietnamese, Thai, Indonesian, Malaysian, French, Spanish, fucking everything.
Check them all on the list, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. One word that describes your playstyle?
Ambitious.
Ambitious. Love that. Great. Awesome. Cool. Fantastic. I guess is our last sort of takeaway for the end of the episode. For any young pros sort of tuning in, which I've no doubt there will be, any advice for some of those younger guys grinding through CS and I guess looking to compete, looking to get to that next level, looking to, I guess, be better individually?
Sit back and be ready to learn. Get rid of your ego, or at least maintain it to a level of being self-aware, and then learn and always be learning and grinding, but never let your ego get out of hand. Keep it on a chain. You want it there to make you the best player possible, but you never want it to ruin you. So keep it on a chain and love it caringly.
Love that. Awesome. Fantastic. Hopefully you get some good DMs about that. Beautiful. really appreciate it, Dexter and Chris, you know, jumping on and sort of chatting about your insights. I think it's important to break down. I think we had, you know, a really special chat, especially earlier on, about, you know, sort of surrounding mental health as well, especially within Australian culture. I think it's one of those things that's not really well talked about, you know, having conversations with your mates and being able to open up and have those really true, honest conversations. So I think, you know, I really appreciate you sharing some really good insights there. I think that was fantastic.
Sweet. Thank you.
Legendary. Now, for everyone tuning in, where can we find you on your socials? I think you're also doing some coaching as well.
Yeah, on good old Twitter, you can find me on Dexter's Journey, and then Instagram, Dexter_official_CS, and then yeah, with my personal coaching, I'm working with Medify, so medify.gg/@DexterCS, and that's where I will do my individual IGL leveling up / individual just damn face of performance leveling up. And yeah, I've been doing that for a few weeks now, and it's been like a really unique and experience where I can teach people a lot of my experience.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, if anyone's sort of listening and is curious, definitely advise reaching out. And yeah, getting involved. But I'll put all the links in the episode description and on the website as well for anyone listening and tuning in, just to make it nice and easy. But really appreciate coming on, brother, and sharing some insights and yeah, giving some insights, especially for some of those up and coming kids and parents even tuning in to sort of understand what the world of CS is like.
So thank you.
Thanks, brother.